हम सारा इंतजाम करके आए हैं.
We are fully prepared. If we have to stay here for a year or six months, we will do as our leader says.
Protests against leadership in Pakistan and Hong Kong. It's Monday, November 4th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, North Korea sets a deadline. New Zealand speaks to its past. The power of dance to heal a nation. Senior computing training. And a surprise celebration in Washington. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Tens of thousands of anti-government protesters descended on the capital of Islamabad, determined to send the sitting prime minister home. The leader of the protests threatened dire consequences if his demands were not met within 2 days. VOA's Aisha Tanzim was at the protest and has this story from Islamabad.
They're here and they're prepared to stay. Tens of thousands of protesters in the capital of Islamabad Friday came from across the country and almost all opposition parties. Leading the anti-government protest is an Islamist political party, Jamiat-e-Ulama-e-Islam, or JUIF, that also runs a network of madrasas across the country. Its hardcore supporters say they stand behind their leader, come what may.
We are fully prepared. If we have to stay here for a year or 6 months, we will do as our leader says. On his orders, we are willing to do anything. The government can use tear gas, batons, or arrest us. We are willing to give our lives.
The leader, Maulana Fazlur Rahman, wants nothing less than the Prime Minister Imran Khan to go home, accusing him of destroying the country's economy and stealing the last election.
The elections in Pakistan on July 25, 2018 were fraudulent. We don't accept their results or the government resulting from them.
Joining him in the protest are Pakistan's two main opposition parties, Pakistan People's Party and Muslim League N, along with others. The government claims the entire thing is a ruse to save leaders of these parties facing corruption charges in court.
This is the first march and sit-in to safeguard corruption. All over the world, people are marching against corrupt governments, and here they are marching to save corrupt leaders.
Rahman has given Khan an ultimatum of 2 days to resign. He has also warned the powerful military, allegedly propping up Khan, to stay impartial.
If we feel that our establishment is supporting this illegal government, then we are issuing a 2-day ultimatum. After that, don't stop us from making up our own minds.
Rahman did not say what actions, if any, the opposition would take if Khan refuses to step down. The government has warned the protesters to stay within the area designated for their rally. But already, the mood on the ground is defiant.
The crowd is charged and says it's willing to sustain the protest for as long as it takes. But if they decide to leave the designated area and move towards parliament, the government has said it's going to try and stop by force, and that may lead to a violent conflict. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
In Hong Kong, no major demonstrations were planned for Sunday. On Saturday, however, pro-democracy rallies devolved into clashes with police as hardcore protesters vandalized subways and buildings and attacked the offices of Xinhua, China's official news agency. Police responded with water cannons, volleys of tear gas, and the arrest of dozens of demonstrators in the 22nd consecutive weekend of protests. The skirmishes lasted until early Sunday. The semi-autonomous city has been mired in 5 months of massive and oftentimes violent protests. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit our website. That's voanews.com. UN chief urges Myanmar to resolve Rohingya crisis. Beijing says ready to work with ASEAN on South China Sea rules. Riot police storm Hong Kong malls to nip more protests. North Korea ups pressure on United States to resume talks by year's end. Vietnam announces arrests in British trafficking case. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found on Facebook each and every day. You can also stop by VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in April said he would give the United States until the end of the year to become more flexible on nuclear talks. Since then, he's launched 12 rounds of missiles to back up that warning, including a launch on Thursday. So far, though, there's no evidence the United States is changing its stance, meaning the situation could soon become more volatile, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
A preview of what may be to come. North Korea on Thursday launched two more missiles, the same multiple rocket launch system it tested in August and September. More evidence Kim Jong-un is serious about his end-of-year deadline for the U.S. to offer more concessions in nuclear talks.
I assume that a huge change will take place next year. That is what I am worrying about right now. In general, there is a big chance things will get worse.
As the end of the year approaches, North Korea's warnings are getting louder. Last month, Kim rode a white horse up his country's tallest mountain, with state media threatening a great operation to strike the world with wonder. Last week, North Korea said Kim's relationship with U.S. President Donald Trump should not be used as a delaying tactic. It also warned that the U.S. is seriously mistaken if it ignores its end-of-year deadline.
If there's no third summit planned or at least a tangible outcome, it's likely that North Korea will conduct nuclear tests or launch an intercontinental ballistic missile.
In recent weeks, North Korea has warned there's no guarantee it won't restart long-range missile or nuclear tests. But Trump, who is dealing with an impeachment inquiry that could threaten his presidency, has given no signs he'll respond to North Korea's deadline. In recent weeks, Trump has barely mentioned North Korea at all. The question is whether Kim Jong-un will soon take bigger steps to get Trump's attention. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres expressed concern over the plight of 730 Muslim Rohingya refugees from Myanmar's Rakhine State, calling on Myanmar's government to take responsibility by dealing with the root causes of their flight to Bangladesh and working toward safe repatriation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. New Zealand is hoping by the year 2040, 1 million Kiwis will be able to speak basic Maori language. That ambitious goal is part of an official strategy that sees the revival of New Zealand's indigenous language as a key part in national identity and reconciliation. Phil Mercer reports from Gisborne in New Zealand.
Alien Weaponry is a Maori heavy metal band. Its album 2 went straight to number 1 in New Zealand. Its success is an unmistakable sign of the resilience of the Maori language. But census data has shown that the number of indigenous speakers in New Zealand has fallen. Glenys Philip Barbara, the former head of the Maori Language Commission, is though optimistic about the future.
There aren't as many people speaking Māori as I'd like. I mean, around 2 in 5 Māori can have a conversation in Te Reo Māori, which is still quite low. But look, we've made huge gains since the days when we were at 2%. That was the 1970s. So we are steadily growing. And of course, without a proper command of the language, you don't actually have that in-depth understanding of your own culture.
Ko te kai taunaki te reo Māori ko Alana Thomas tērā, e whakapau kahana ki a puiui o te reo I tōna kāinga.
Māori TV is publicly funded. Its presenters and journalists speak only in Māori. It's a far cry from when children were beaten or whipped at school for speaking their native tongue. Tina Garter is an Indigenous rights campaigner. She believes colonization has had terrible consequences for language.
We talk about this idea of cultural genocide, and that one of the forms that colonization takes is that the policies, the legislation, the funding, the structures really lean itself towards only letting you survive if you survive as a colonial version of yourself, and it's much more difficult to survive as a Maori. Our resistance to that is to continue to flood our communities with beautiful Māori speaking, Māori singing, ceremonial and contemporary versions and ongoing evolving versions of ourselves.
Millions of dollars of government money has been promised to help revitalise Māori. Like many other New Zealanders, the Prime Minister Jacinta Ardern is eager to learn.
In New Zealand, there is a Māori proverb, He aha te mea nui o te ao. What is the most important thing in the world? He tangata, he tangata, he tangata. It is the people, the people, the people.
Words such as kia ora, hello, and kai food have long been part of New Zealand English. It's hoped that by 2040, 1 million Kiwis will be able to speak basic Māori. Indigenous New Zealanders make up about 15% of the national population. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Gisborne, New Zealand.
Coming up, healing with dance. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Vietnam announced its first arrests in a suspected cross-border trafficking case in Essex, England, where authorities found the bodies of 39 Vietnamese they believe suffocated to death in a refrigerated truck. Police in Ha Tinh Province say they arrested and charged two suspects. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, great art can change the world. It can show us a moment in time. It can even help us heal profound pain and suffering. That's how one Cambodian dancer is using it. Through dance, she's telling the story of forced marriage during the Khmer Rouge regime. VOA's Chetra Chap reports.
In this performance, a woman begs a Khmer Rouge soldier not to force her into marriage. During the brutal regime, refusing to marry was a treasonous act. Cambodian award-winning dancers and choreographer Sopilin Chiam Shapiro performed the stories of the Khmer Rouge's use of forced marriage at a Buddhism-focused event in Washington, D.C. Her hope is to help victims.
The victims of forced marriages can heal watching this performance because their story is heard and remembered.
The 52-year-old choreographer who co-founded Khmer Arts said this dance was born in the courtroom at the Khmer Rouge Tribunal in Cambodia.
They prosecuted the Khmer Rouge leaders in K002/02 for forced marriages during the Pol Pot regime. At the end of the trials, they needed to have a reparation ceremony for the victims, so they asked me to create this dance piece.
The tribunal, officially known as the Extraordinary Chambers in the Courts of Cambodia, was established in 2006. Its purpose was to try the senior Khmer Rouge members most responsible for the 1.7 million lives executed by the regime in the 1970s. In the case of marriage regulation, the regime was found to have forced, quote, the productions of children, unquote, in order to increase the country's population.
And they forced young men and young women to get married.
A Khmer Rouge survivor, Shapiro paints the pictures of the atrocity through her famed innovative approach of infusing traditional dance moves with modern ideas and energy.
She's deeply trained in Cambodian classical dance, and her company performs the classical works. But she's also an innovative choreographer who really pushes Cambodian dance into the present and into the future.
This means Shapiro doesn't just teach her students the dance moves. She helps them find their own creative and independent voices as artists.
Learning this piece, I had to really think about what a Khmer Rouge soldier would feel. Like, why would they be angry and have to put myself in their perspective? And it grew supplement, encouraged me and pushed me to have that anger, have that character, even though it's not me, but it's for the story. It's to teach other people our history and what happened during the Khmer Rouge.
Shapiro and her dancers never experienced the Khmer Rouge's forced marriage firsthand. She said they had to be creative in trying to understand what happened and recreate the experience in the form of dancing.
I'm happy that we are using our creativity with a strong foundation in our culture to create something new to represent the creativity of the Cambodian people in the 21st century.
A new way to represent old pain and promote healing. I'm Chatra Chap for VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. Riot police stormed several malls in Hong Kong in a move to thwart more pro-democracy protests, though violence did break out when a knife-wielding man slashed several people. Most of the rallies did not pan out Sunday as scores of riot police took positions to thwart protesters. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, this generation of children are called digital natives because they've grown up in a digital world. But there are two generations of older people and many disadvantaged people for whom the digital world is a mystery. A computer science teacher in Washington, D.C. is working to change that. VOA's Mikhailo Komodowski tells us more.
Let's go. They're going to ask you to connect to a Wi-Fi, and you want to hit D.C. Wi-Fi.
Adrian Sutton is a computer science teacher. Some days he has to remind his students how to turn on their laptops.
I had a young lady who was 99 years old, and she was by far like the VIP, the best person in the class. She got tons of stickers.
Almost
99.
He is helping these students over 65 get engaged in a more digital, connected life.
I'm trying to. I mean, I pick up pretty well. But I'm trying to learn as much as I can in this first session.
Alice Burns is 80. She's used to reading newspapers, but is learning to access the same information with a click of a button. But it's a steep learning curve.
I wouldn't say it's hard. It's kind of complicated. Well, it's the same. Yeah, it's hard. I think it's hard. But I thought as seniors it would be harder for us than it would be for the younger generation. Because I have a granddaughter, and she taught me how to use a smartphone. My granddaughter did, yeah.
The seniors are engaged. They understand that they need these smartphones. They like the benefits of the smartphones, like Lyft and Uber and Now this like Safeway and Walmart does food deliveries, and they can even use the DC 311 app on their phone as well. So they could, you know, send city complaints, whether it's like a dirty alley or a broken stop sign or something like that.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser taught her mom and dad how to handle their gadgets. Now she champions computer literacy.
We see it as a tool to allow seniors to age in place. My folks, for example, if they didn't have access to order food online, it would be a lot more difficult for them to enjoy life in their own home.
Ooh, Excel. I need that Excel course.
The classes are not just for retirees. The youngest graduate in this class was 21 years old. She learned how to use Microsoft products, successfully passed the certification exams, and got a new job.
And so it's just been going from there. And recently, as of last week, I just completed the Microsoft Office Outlook.
These students have proven you can get new knowledge regardless of your age.
Just a bit of patience, hard work, and of course, desire to explore. And you can achieve anything. Mikhailo Komandovsky, Bruce Furder, VOA News, Washington.
Much older than many of those students was the last time Washington, D.C. had won baseball's World Series. 1924 was the date. But now, D.C. has a World Series trophy, thanks to the Washington Nationals. And thousands of fans plied along a parade route down Constitution and Pennsylvania Avenues yesterday to celebrate the Nationals players and their families. Saqibal Islam gathered some of the sounds from the day.
Color red, the blue. I'm a dangerous man with some money in my pocket.
They danced on the streets, mostly dressed in red and some as World Series trophy. And they also made a lot of noise.
I'm feeling great! I lost my voice on Wednesday. It hasn't come back since. This is amazing. Absolutely amazing. We won the World Series, baby!
The District of Columbia honored the Nationals baseball team with a victory parade as the team won its first ever World Series title with a historic win over the Houston Astros.
They earned it, man. The fan base of this town, they stuck with us through bad and good, and I couldn't be happier to bring that trophy home and show it in front of all these people.
And the team's victory lap through downtown Washington was a sight to see and hear, as music, confetti, and loud cheers welcomed the champions, along with the trophy, as they rode in open-top buses.
I like the Clydesdale horses, I like the crowds, which were spectacular, and I like the confetti.
Huge number of fans came to the celebrations, something that city really needed, some said.
Look how happy everybody is. It just brings a city that has lots of controversy to be all as one and be happy for something that everybody is happy for.
Once you meet people who are fans, they just open up their hearts to you and you just feel like family.
The parade ended at a stage erected near the United States Capitol.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner.
Where the players and the city officials showed off the trophy. D.C. Mayor thanked the team.
They don't give up, they dance with joy, and they believe in each other.
The D.C. police chief praised the crowd and said there were no major hiccups.
One of the things that's great about our fans here in Washington, D.C., they know how to behave. They're very classy.
Nice.
Also giving thanks, the team's fans.
Nats, thank you for an inspiring year. Thank you for staying in the fight. Helped us stay in the fight. And looking forward to next year.
Nats, yeah! World Series champ!
Go Nats, baby! Yeah!
Saqibal Islam, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our programs on iTunes and SoundCloud. If you happen to miss any part of our program, download the full-length versions from those places or just go to our website. That's voanews.com. We also have a YouTube channel. That's right. We've got videos coming out from VOA Asia. We'd love for you to take a look. Just visit us at YouTube. And you can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. So many ways to follow us throughout the day. We'd also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Tony Pollack, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. Ira Melman, Keith Lane, our interns Hyong and Afra. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.